And good morning, everybody. You're listening to the Mighty 690 KGGF. Kyle High with you this morning. Hope you are having a fantastic day. Currently 60 degrees outside. Expecting a high today of, let's double check that real quick. We're going to be warmer than we were yesterday. Expecting a high today of around 75, expecting 80s for the weekend. And joining us in studio right now from the K-State Extension offices, we have Frances Graves, who I do believe is her first trip in here. And we also have Wendy Powell. And ladies, good morning. How are you doing today?
Great. How are you, Kyle?
Doing pretty good. And again, it's good to meet you, Frances, your first trip here to KGGF. And before we get started with today's topics, you guys do have a few workshops coming up, correct?
Yes. So we've got our pressure canner testing days coming up. Holly Miner, our new family consumer science agent, is going to be testing. So dial gauge canners. Also looking at weighted gauge canners, she's going to check gaskets, safety plugs, warping, pitting, things like that to get you all ready for harvesting. So June 1st, that was yesterday in Independence. So if you missed that, call the Independence office, 331-2690. And then in Pittsburgh tomorrow, Girard on Friday, Altamont on the 8th next week, and Fredonia on the 9th. So those are from 9 to 3. And if you've got any questions, give any of our extension offices a call, and they'll be able to answer your questions.
So lots of times for you to check it out. If you missed yesterday, there's still plenty of chances for you to check that out. All right. Well, I guess, Wendy, we'll go ahead and start with you today. And again, welcome back to studio. And today you're talking about animal tails. And first question is, are there different types of animal tails?
Yes. So that's a pretty easy question. Yes, there are lots of different types. You can think of like a simple horse's tail and how it's varies in size among horses, but it's stringy, lots of different strands of hair, and they're not all grouped together compared to like maybe a mouse's tail is not stringy. The opposite of. So each one of those different types have different functions.
And do you say they have different types of functions? Does shape indicate the type of function it has?
Yes, you could say that. So like going back to that horse's tail, how it's stringy and the horses swish it back and forth, that acts as a fly swatter or steers away other biting insects. So really, the form of that tail is specific for shooing flies. And like a cow's tail is the same way. The end of their tail is stringy like that. Each strand of hair is very coarse. And so that's purpose is to swish the insects off of the shoulders of the animal and whatnot.
And so like you say, it kind of swishes it away, just like you know, like you say with a mouse or a rat, they do, their tail does something completely different. Probably more for balance for them more than anything.
Yes, exactly. So whenever an animal is leaping, they can use their tail as a counterbalance, or pouncing on other animals, their prey or whatnot. Then that tail can guide them, act as a rudder one way or the other. And then you've got different shapes like a beaver's tail where it's wide and flat. And that's used in several different ways where the beaver can slap water and let other beavers know that there's danger nearby, or let danger know that the beaver knows it's there. So don't need to come any closer. And it also can be used to defend the animal itself.
And it's also used probably for when they're making a dam to help pack it down, correct?
Yes. So they use that tail for swatting. The other interesting thing that I learned while doing this research, for beavers and lizards both, they can store fat in their tail for upcoming times of low food. So, you know, lizards, their tail is also used for defense, in the fact that it can come off and they can regenerate a tail. So the poor thing, hopefully it doesn't get a lost tail right before winter.
Right. That's not something you want, especially right before winter. But yeah, I've seen that before where basically like the tail gets bit off and the animal that's attacked them is gnawing on that tail while they've scrayed off.
Yes.
Basically, it's just like they just detach their tail and like, all right, I'm out of here. I'll just lose this tail and hopefully it'll grow back pretty quickly. So,
yes.
So that's pretty interesting defense way to go. It's basically kind of a distraction element.
Yes. They can live to fight another day.
Exactly. So what are, other than, you know, like swiffing, you said tails can do different things depending on what it looks like. Like you said, the beaver tail kind of acts as a defense, but also it can do kind of a packing down type thing. And you said a counterbalance. Now, would that be like on a, when a cat is like diving or something like that? Do they use their tail as kind of a counterbalance? Would they do that?
Yes. Yeah. So you know that the cat tail is nearly as long as the animal itself. So yes, that tail is a counterbalance. And think of like a fox also. Whenever it's pouncing, their tail is fluffed up. And so that catches wind, or that fox can put their tail wherever it's needed to land in the correct spot.
So, yeah, because I had a cat had like the longest tail I'd ever seen in my life. But she also used it as a thing where she covered up her eyes with it, which I always thought was pretty funny.
Oh, that's clever. Yes.
So she was like, I'll just use this to cover my eyes.
So that brings up another form of function. So like I had mentioned, foxes, squirrels as well, those animals that have the really fluffy tails, they like to curl up in a little ball and then they put their tail over their nose. And so when it's cold, their nose doesn't get cold or frostbitten. So that's another function of the tail, is to cover the nose and keep it warm while the animal is sleeping.
Right. They basically just curl up into a little ball to keep themselves warm.
Yes.
I tell you what, the squirrels are really out a lot lately, because there's a I was telling you about a tree over my house. I can hear them back and forth. It doesn't really bother me that much, but it's just funny when I'm laying in bed on a Saturday morning and I hear the squirrels going back and forth. They're just they're really active right now.
Yes, they're happy that spring has arrived.
Absolutely. And they're out getting acorns, though. I've seen them out there and I don't bother them. It's just like, let me get through their stuff and go on. So
yep.
All right, so again, tails do have lots of different things, and again you were talking about also a fox tail. So what other kind of tails, like you know, birds, do they have somewhat kind of like tails? Because
yes,
they're kind of like rudders, correct?
Yes, that's exactly right. So it's not a true tail that has vertebrae in it like what a cow or a fox tail might be like. But birds use their tail for balancing, like a woodpecker, whenever they're upright against a tree, pecking on a tree, their tail feathers keep them upright and help them balance. Because, again, their tail feathers are nearly as long as the body of the actual animal.
Especially a scissor tail flycatcher like we have a lot in Oklahoma. Those tails are really long. Like you said, I think it's actually longer than the bird itself.
Yes. Yeah, those tails on the birds are really important for flying and guiding. The other thing about birds' tails is they're used in courtship. So that's an old-fashioned word. I was at the library program last night, and we talked about what courtship was, which is really interesting with five-year-olds. Those tails, if you think of a peacock or maybe a wild turkey, the males have these really fantastic displays of beautiful feathers. And so that just signals to mates, potential mates in the area, that they're ready for a relationship.
Right. Yeah. No, I mean, and that was when you talked about birds and courtship, the first animal that popped in my mind was peacock.
Yes.
And that, because females, I don't think, have that that big, huge, just...
Right.
Thing to show off, because that's the male thing. They're letting females, hey, I, you know, look at me.
Yep.
Pretty much.
They like to strut their stuff. Yeah, peahens don't have such an extravagant display. They do have tail feathers, but not like the males.
Right. And of course, it comes with the term that, you know, it's when a guy's, you know, really interested in a girl, they start peacocking because they're trying to show off. So anyway, again, lots of different forms for tails. And if anybody wants more information on this kind of stuff, how can they find it on the K-State website?
Well, I don't have this on our website right now, but I've been doing this with some pictures and some fun interactive activities with kids at some library programs. So there's lots of fun activities going on at each local library. Each one is different this summer because we're transitioning from pandemic to, you know, back to a little bit more normal. Last night I was in Caney. I'll be going to Girard later this month. I know McCune's also doing some really fun library programs. So just contact your local public library. They've got some really great programs. But if you want to know more information about Tales specifically, then give me a call at the Altamont office, 620-784-5337.
One more thing I did want to ask you is because I just thought about that and I saw what you had over there is... Possums, they like to use their tails as a grasping type thing. Because I remember when I was a kid, there was a possum in our backyard. Animal control came out, and they did, I don't know what they did, but they stuck out a stick or something, and the possum wrapped its tail around the stick. And I, for whatever reason, they carried it through the house. And I remember seeing this huge possum upside down on it, and which I was like scared to death. But I think they may have tranquilized it or something, but they carried it through the house, took it away, and just took it to an area away from, because it was right in the middle of the city, by the way. So that's what surprised me, right in the middle of OKC.
Yeah. Wow.
So why he was there. But the dogs were, what had happened is my parents went out back and they saw it, and my dogs were barking at it, and it was on the ground playing possum.
There you go.
It was scared to death. And so the animal control came out, and they basically put a stick out and wrapped its tail around it. I don't know why they took it through the house, but I just remember being a very large possum. But they kind of use that as a grasping tool, correct?
Yes. So you probably thought of monkeys also. They use their tails to swing from tree to tree, kind of like a fifth limb.
Mm-hmm.
We call those prehensile tails or grasping tails. The interesting thing about the possum tail, its shape and its skin is perfect for wrapping around tree branches. So it's kind of a naked type of tail, but has really coarse, coarse spread out hairs. So that tail can really grasp the tree branch, and that's how possums sleep, is upside down in a tree, just like you see in Ice Age.
I never thought that was a real thing until I actually saw it in person, where I was like, wow, is that possum really up there hanging upside down, sleeping? And if he was, also tails can be used for communication as
yes.
well, right?
Yeah. So we had mentioned earlier that beaver use their tail to slap the water, and they let other beavers know information, whatnot. But let's talk a minute or two about dogs and cat tails. So we all know that we can look at the animal's tail and kind of see what mood they're in. So a wagging dog tail means
very happy.
Very happy. But when a cat wags its tail,
it's usually agitated.
That's right. So no wonder these two critters can't get along. Their tails don't even get along.
They both do the same thing, and they're thinking exactly different things. One is happy, the other one is like, I'm annoyed, leave me alone.
Exactly. Yes. So we can look at the tails and kind of figure out what they're thinking. Now, when a skunk has their tail up in the air.
Run.
Yes, exactly. Yes, because you're about to get stanky.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You don't want the skunk sticking its tail up. But back to cats, when their tail is up, that usually means they're in a good mood. They're happy.
Yes, exactly.
Or they're trying to, if there's another male in there, they're trying to show dominance, I do believe, if I'm right. And then if their tail's down, it's just they're kind of in a regular mood. They don't care.
Yeah, there's lots of different diagrams out there of the different ways tails can be for felines and canines, and a lot of other animals too, and you can kind of read their mood based on their tail position.
Yeah, so like you said, dogs, cats, the reason they don't get along, their tails do the same thing. They're in completely opposite moods at that point. Dog's like, I'm happy, I want to play. And cat's like, no. So, all right. Well, we're going to go ahead and take a quick break here. And when we come back, we will have Frances Graves join us today. And she will be talking about a few things, including a grant writing workshop. So let's go ahead and take that break. When we come back, we will have Frances Graves. You are listening to the Mighty 690 KGGF here on this hump day morning in Southeast Kansas, currently 60 degrees. And good morning, everybody. You're listening to the Mighty 690 KGGF back from our break. And we are back with Greenside Up, our second part of the program today. Currently 61 degrees outside. And joining us for the first time in studio today is Frances Graves, who is the Wildcat District Director and Community Vitality Agent. And Frances, good morning and welcome to the studio for the first time.
Good morning. Thank you for having me.
All right. It's great to have you in studio today. And you want to talk about a workshop that is coming up pretty soon, actually. actually, coming up on the 7th and 8th. It is a grant writing workshop, and these are pretty important, are they not?
Yep, that's correct. So this workshop is Monday and Tuesday next week, but we'll be taking it to virtual workshop, so you can enroll all the way through the last minute. We've typically offered this grant writing workshop once or twice a year in the Wildcat District, and it's been retooled during COVID to be a virtual workshop. So that means anyone can take the workshop from anywhere across the country, really, but across the state, and they can take it from the comfort of their home. It's 2 afternoons. We've been able to break it up also. It used to just be an all-day workshop, and this time it's 2 afternoons.
Okay, so it makes it a little bit shorter where people, it's not as long. So basically, but still, you're still getting the same experience, though. It's just broken up into two parts. So speaking for grant writing, how long does it take to put together a good grant application? Because it's not just like throwing something together. You got to put in a lot of work on these things, correct?
Yeah, that's right. It is a competitive process. So if you see a grant coming up that you want to apply for and it's, you know, got a deadline in 60 days, I think it's really important to get started as early as possible because you need to gather your facts. You need to be able to tell your story and you need to make sure that you take the time to proofread things and show it around, maybe to a couple of friends or coworkers so you can make sure you don't have any mistakes and that things have been answered the same consistently throughout the application.
Well, and that's kind of like what we do here at the station when we write stories before we post and we let somebody else look at it just to make sure it's proofread fine. Because when you look at something and type it out, you're going to see it almost the same way each time you see it, and you may not see that mistake. It's always good to have that second pair of eyes to check it out and make sure everything looks good.
Yep, absolutely. And because it's competitive, that's an easy way to get rid of someone's application. You know, if someone forgot to fill out a section or, you know, they're giving mixed messages throughout their application or there's some glaring errors, it shows that maybe perhaps you might not be trusted with that grant funder's money. So that'd be an easy way for you to get skipped out of the pile.
Absolutely. And also, does it matter when you get it in? Is it maybe the sooner the better when you get your application in, or is that make a difference at all?
You know, that's a good question. That depends on the grant. Sometimes there are, especially with the COVID relief funds that we've been seeing, a lot of times those are they're noted as awards will be distributed until funds run out. So in that case, you want to get your application in as soon as possible. But for the typical grant that has a deadline, you can for sure send that in, you know, right up against the deadline. You just want to make sure that you're not, you know, trying to get something done too quick and not allowing yourself that time.
Absolutely. So what is the most important thing to remember when applying for a grant?
Sure, that, you know, there's several things you should really pay attention to, including you need to really tell your story and be specific as to what funds you're hoping to use and what you're going to do with those funds. Have an accurate, detailed budget. But probably the most important thing is that you need to remember that the person who's giving the money has a certain purpose that they want to use that money for. So it doesn't matter if you have the best idea in the world, you need to frame your idea in a way that makes that grant funder believe that you can take their money and do their purpose and follow their interests.
Exactly. I mean, like you say, you can have a great idea. Say, I want to do this. I want to do Project A, but this person is giving money for Project B, so that's probably not going to match up well with them. So that's one of the things you need to look at is what is the purpose of this grant, correct?
Yep, exactly. Yeah, you could have the best project in the world, and if it's not what that fund is designated for, and a lot of times these funds are, you know, memorial funds for people who had a certain intention with their money, and they have a board that's being directed to follow that rule. So even if it's a great project, it really needs to clearly state how your project will follow the mission of what that fund is purposed.
So if people were looking for grants to write for, where are some great places that people can find grants?
So in this workshop, some of the really cool things that are covered are where to find grants. There are actually 8 pages worth of grant sources that this specialist who teaches this class is makes accessible to the students. But some popular grant source funds in our community would be just local community foundations. There's one in almost every community. They often have an annual granting cycle. Civic groups like the Kiwanis and Rotary, the Masonic Foundation, they often have an annual grant that they perhaps would award to a community group. Credit unions, there's a website called grants.gov, and that's kind of the hub for all federal grants. And then also, State of Kansas has lots of grants, the Community Development Block Grants, Department of Commerce, Department of Health and Environment, Department of Transportation and Wildlife and Parks. Those organizations all have grants that they typically give out each year.
And coming back to the grant writing workshop you guys are going to be hosting, what are some of the things that folks will learn during this workshop?
So this is a pretty cool workshop because you both get to practice things and learn things. So it's kind of a hands-on, even in the virtual format. You're going to learn how to conquer your fears, to start writing. It's a good workshop for whether you've never written a grant before or whether you're used to writing grants and you just want to find out more and to get more resources. You'll find out data that you can use for indicating need in your application, like community needs that you might fulfill with your project, the sources of grants, and then how to develop the different elements. Like a lot of times an application will say, state your problem, tell me your outcomes, tell me your budget. That's a big one. And all of those things are covered in this course.
And usually at any time, there's usually a grant out there to apply for. Obviously, if somebody's applying for one, they're not going to apply to every one of them. I mean, I guess you could, but everyone that you can. But there's always a good amount of grants out there somewhere, depending on the situation, correct?
That's correct. Yeah, I mean, you can just Google grant opportunities. You know, if you're wanting to build a playground, you can for sure search that on the web. And there are organizations and companies that are interested in funding that.
All right. So again, the grant writing workshop online coming up on June 7th and 8th from 1 to 4 p.m. The cost is only $60. Enrollment is limited, though, so please use the wait list if offered, correct?
That's correct. There'll be another one in the fall, but this one is local to the Wildcat District. And part of the fun is that you get to kind of network with locals as part of this call. That you'll get to hear from the specialist and learn all the tips, but then also have that time in breakout groups to hear what other people in our community are working on.
And see that, and that's another good part about this workshop. You're not just, you know, learning to do grant writing, you're networking as well, kind of extending that reach to people in this area, right?
Yep, absolutely.
So that's a great thing. Again, that's coming up on June 7th and 8th from 1 to 4 p.m. It'll be online, so you can hang out at home and, I don't know, at least make sure the shirt you're wearing is professional looking, even if you're just wearing shorts.
Yeah.
But because I've seen that before, when I interned at a TV station, the newscaster, the top he wore was his dress top, his coat, but he was wearing like shorts underneath because it was right in the middle of the summer. So
I've heard of that happening.
so it's just more comfortable. All right. Well, Francis, thank you so much for coming in today. If anybody does have any more questions, how can they get a hold of you?
You can email me. That's the best, at Francis Graves, Francis with an E, at ksu.edu. And the grant workshop, you can find all the information at our website, wildcatdistrict.ksu.edu, on the right-hand side under upcoming events. There's a link to registration.
All right. Well, again, Francis, thank you so much for coming on today. We really do appreciate it. And we will talk to you guys here. We'll talk to you again. Hopefully, we'll have you back soon for some more green side up. And coming back to you here, Wendy, before we get on out of here, if somebody wants to get a hold of you, how can they get a hold of you?
Yeah, they can call me at any of the offices. The Altamont office phone number is 620-784-5337.
All right. Well, again, ladies, thank you so much for coming in today. We really do appreciate it. And again, we will see you guys here in a few weeks.
Thank you.
Thank you.
All right. Let's go ahead and take a break. And when we come back, we're going to start Open Line. You're listening to the Mighty 690 KGGF here on this hump day.